Accession number 16723, George Lambert, reel 5.
Mr. Lambert, reel 5. The box itself, where you dug in, was the trenches, or what was the?
Well, I would imagine the boys, was all the front were all dug in their own individual slit trenches, but we at the back, we were under canvas, but we were under canvas in the sense that we dug a hole big enough for two of us to lie in, and then the tent was draped over the top at a low angle, and you crawled into it, and that was our home, although, you know, they lived that way. But that's how, what does that say? We weren't in the forward troops, we were in the back troops.
How did you cope with latrines and that kind of thing?
Oh, just the same as anywhere else, just dig and dig a hole and canvas round. And just after a while, fill it in and move further away, you know, dig another one.
And washing facilities, I know you mentioned your pint of water, but did you have a washing area, or was it just...
No, just where you are. You just where the area where you were, that's where, you know, that's where we were. You operated in that area.
How did water come into the box? How did you get your water?
Oh, they come in with a water bowser. And you just went and got your pint of water, did you?
And obviously you would drink some of it. What did it taste like? Was it fresh or?
Yeah, well, it's a funny thing as far as doing this. By having to go that experience, that's one thing I don't do now. I don't drink water. I mean, a cup of tea or a lager or two, but I can't do it, but it's very, very little. I know it's probably that way, it hasn't harmed us, like, but I don't drink water. I've never sort of drunk water, a lot of water.
Was thirst then a problem? Were you thirsty a
great deal? You had to overcome your thirst. You hadn't the water to drink, so you had to conserve it.
How did you cope with the fierce heat of the day?
Nobody was allowed to sunbathe, for a better word. We had the unfortunate thing was a lad from Gateshead. I can't remember his name, but he's just a thin sort of lad. He was a TA lad, and he blistered up very badly, and he was put on a charge for sunbathing, and we had to convince the officer in charge that put him down that he had not taken his shirt off. He'd been burned through his shirt, and it was doings, and it wasn't later on found out. He was sent home, he couldn't do it, but the heat, you know, you couldn't. But there again, the heat was strong in the day, but it was cold at night time. But I just forgot his name. He was a TA lad, but he was burned through his shirt, but he was allergic to the sun.
At night time, you say, it got cold?
It got cold, yeah.
So you were wearing very little clothing during the day?
Yeah, you were down as... You allowed your shirt doings, but at night time you had to put a jerkin on or something. Cool.
Night in the desert.
Boredom.
Can you see? Is it very dark or?
Dark. Dunes, very dark.
Could you get lost easily?
Yeah, if you don't. I think a lot of people got when they think of the desert, they think it's just a good big heap of sand, but it's not.
Can you describe it?
Very hard, rocky. Slaty stone, as they say, and you know, doing it's very hard. You get the odd areas where you get the softness, but the majority of the desert, it's quite hard.
Is it flat or undulating?
Yeah, more or less. And of course, it's got. Well, yeah, you could virtually see it. Majority of it is, you could see quite a way.
Were there any problems health-wise in the desert? You mentioned the sunburning, of course, but did you suffer from flies?
Oh, actually, the fly problem is always there, but there again, I think one of the, well, you always had to make sure there was plenty of disinfectant put down on the trains and whatnot, and doing to keep them, and you had to keep them moving, just keep them doing. But they were always well out of the area, you know, doing. But
how did you cope with the various things, methods tried to cope with the flies?
Well, you spend most of your time, well, a lot of the time when they're doing this, in your tent, and keep your flap shut. And try and keep them doing.
Eating and drinking, were there a menace then?
Yes, oh yes. Oh, I don't, well, you had any time.
How did you stop kind of swallowing them with going on your food? Just with your hands?
Yeah, just trying to.
There was no attempts to build fly traps or
no,
what have you?
No. Make a fly trap for the cuckoos, you know, for to keep the stuff in, you know, doing. With white muslin.
And how? Was it just on poles or?
No, just keep it at the back of the truck or wherever there was doings.
The officers not want some kind of special methods of keeping the flies away from themselves? Did you have to do anything there to build or make anything? It's
not really. Not. But they're in the they were in the field the same as us, you know, so they had to do ones, but.
Were there any diseases or illnesses that you contracted that was in the desert?
Well, that's good. Not that I can see a lot of, as I suppose that lads went down with a tummy bug and things like that. I mean, it was all hardtack biscuits that particular time. I think we used to get some hardtack from South Africa. And they were full of weasels, the weevils, the ones. And where the holes were, the ones. And what we used to do with them, ourselves, is used to soak them. And then we used to try and cook them, kid ourselves, with Yorkshire puddings.
So the food supply was very basic.
Sorry?
Food supply was very basic.
Oh, just dry. Then we got onto American rations. And but that was afterwards, the ones, because that came in later.
Did you get anyone coming up to the rear of the box with fluids? I'm thinking of Nafis or Salvation Army, any of those people up here?
No. The lads used to go off and get the rations. The ration truck used to go off and come back with the rations, and you look forward to that as. Once you got a couple of bottles of beer and that, you know, doings, which as you were welcome to drink then, like, you know, doings. Of course, you used to volunteer to go down with a truck driver if you could get a chance. And the object of that was because you went down, you always dropped a bottle of whiskey, but what you did was you accidentally caught the neck. And the neck would come off, but it would leave you with the bottle. So you took that back and you got another one because the top of the bottle hadn't been broken open, the seal. So they would give you another bottle where you drank that one on the way back, or helped to drink it on the way back. Or shared it out when you got back. All the tricks of the trade.
Where was the major supply area?
Well back.
Was the life in the desert itself, moving around, was that easy?
Well, yes, but it was totally boredom. You know what I mean? When you think of spending 3.5 years out there, I think I had one little holiday down at Alex for a couple of days, I think it was. But that wasn't until we moved further back. And all the time we're up in the box and whatnot, and right down when you were there and you were stuck with it, there's no chance of any thing.
Landmarks, were there any landmarks to help you move around?
No, it's all basic. Nobody ever come to see us up there. They would never thought about entertaining the troops then. In those days.
How did you move around? I mean, obviously, you had to move around to some degree. Did you work on compass or stars or what?
Well, we didn't. It was, as I say, we were just doing what the companies had to do. It was all done.
You didn't get involved in jock columns and patrols?
No. We maybe go through them after they'd happened on the way back. I mean, for instance, when they broke out the box and went north, I'm not quite sure. One of the companies got involved. It was the only time I'm given to understand that the bayonets was ever used, which was when they went to Tobruk, which you probably might have heard about. But when we got up towards, we were more or less the tail end of the ninth moving out.
Before we come to that, you didn't go on these columns and raids that they
no.
had. Where were the Germans or the enemy in relation to yourselves when you first got into the box? Were they close or a good distance off?
Well, the only way I can answer that one is they couldn't have been too far away, because once we got up the Gazala and got settled down, and we met up with the Indians, and cigarettes come into question, and they'd say, cigarette, and we get you some. And the next day they would come. They'd been done a raid on the German lines, and they would bring his German cigarettes back. So they couldn't have been. They'd go and get some when they were out on patrol. That was your main thing, smoking. For me, anyhow. I smoked, far too much, I suppose. Because I was fortunate in the sense that a couple of lads in the battalion, in the company, in the platoon sort of thing, didn't smoke, so I got theirs.
This is kind of bartering.
Yeah, Were
there a lot of supplies of cigarettes coming through to you quite easily?
Just what was coming through in those days was just what was supplied through the army. You were allowed so many in doings, but it wasn't until later on that they started coming through. I think the first ones I ever got from anybody was when we were in Sicily.
Were you getting mail regularly?
Oh yes, I got a mail regularly. That was, you were just sitting writing letters doing most of the time.
Were any parcels being sent to you from home?
Yeah, the odd one. That was a nice day. Bit of broken cake.
Is mail important to a soldier? Mail from home?
Oh, it is. Very important. But you're not, you mean, you can only refer to yourself and how you miss the other side, because you're not allowed to say where you were doing, what you were doing. Basically, every letter was more or less the same, in a sense.
Did you see men who were not getting mail that were badly affected by it?
Oh, just have to sit and read some mail out for someone or two of them. I've got a letter, will you read it for us? Will you write one for us? How would you write a letter to somebody else's girlfriend?
Had there been any changes to your platoon? It was Sergeant Davison, for example, he's still with you in Gazala?
He was still with us at Gazala, and left us then. It wasn't, later on that we lost him. Dennis Thompson took over.
Any other memories of the box itself, before we come to the breakout, living in the box, life in the box?
Well, I can only say, as I said before, it's for us, total boredom. I mean, the boys in the front were going out doing patrols and helping to fill the time in one thing or another, but I don't suppose it was very exciting for them, but we were at more or less boredom.
Did you have any German aircraft coming over from time to time?
Oh, yes. Of course, our little aircraft, the Lysander, used to appear now and again.
As the as the time came for the German assault on the boxes, and of course the break-in from as mentioned before, How did that start to affect you as they moved, in effect, closer to you?
Well, as I say, we hadn't seen anything of them until we did have to move, and then we went north. And when we went north, we couldn't get through. We had to come back. Well, the ammunition dumps had been programmed to be exploded. And as we were coming back down through to the boxes, they get further south, they were going up as we were coming past. I don't know, they were a little distance off, like, but I heard them scare them, like, you know, doing. And we went south. Then we came a bit further south, and then we headed for...
Did you realise how bad the situation was? Obviously,
well, we had been told we'd lost the 69th Brigade, you know, we'd been told we'd lost them, like, you know, doing. And more or less said, every man for himself at the moment, get back.
What were your feelings? Another defeat,
well, another Dunkirk. Disappointed, another, you know, where the hell are we going to win it once before? We got knocked back, and here we are getting knocked back again. Dunes.
Do you recall the journey out through Tobruk that you took?
No, well, we didn't go through Tobruk. We had to come south. And we come right down, as I say, right down. It kept on going. That's when we come down to Mirza Matru.
Did you have any problems on that journey?
Not on the journey coming down at that particular time. We were, as you know, the battalion lagered up for the night. Well, doing when the headquarters went into a wadi. And what actually happened, I think, from what I can gather, was that we were in the wadi already lagered up. And MT officer, lieutenant, was bringing in the MTs, wagons, transport and whatnot. And when he got near the wadi, he was yelling and shouting, "Is that the 9th Durhams?" And of course, he got the answer back, yes. And the next morning, Jerry had moved in with us. And...
He said Jerry had moved in with you.
He was sitting outside waiting until the break of dawn, and then he opened up on us.
This is at Mirza Matru.
It's just outside of Mirza Matru, and I can't remember the name of the wadi, but it didn't make any difference. But he took, well, Christ, what the hell's happening, you know, to us. And we had to make a break, but Jerry came in and marched us all out. And...
Is this where Wakenshaw won his Victoria Cross?
Yeah.
Do you know anything of that particular incident?
Well, one of the things that happened in the wadi before that was that an officer, something like Pickering, I might be wrong, but anyhow, he held some money, which was like PRI stuff, and it was supposed to be in the region of £600 or something. And, of course, he just dropped that, apparently, and buried it. Doing this. And then, of course, as I said, we were all marched out. And we were sitting in the sunshine, propped up against old trucks and whatnot, for about quite a while, nearly most of the day. Then Jerry started to move us. And he was marching us towards Mirza Matru in that area, which I didn't know then, but know now, or then, or later. But there was an officer in the front who, when you come back, he had his own compass. And he kept moving, and he worked the convoy, the group of us, to walk in, and we got near to Mirza Matru. And Jerry had taken some of our own carrier stuff, and he was using that to escort us with, because there wasn't very many. It was like, even Jerry's with us, but as far as I can tell you, it was the Indians who opened up on the transport. They realised what was happening, and they opened up, and one or two lads got hit in the march, doing this. And then we got through the minefield, through them, and we got back into Mirza Matru. And that was my experience of being a prisoner of war for about 24 hours or so, doing this.
So,
but in that time was when Adam Wakenshaw was involved, and it was in the morning apparently when it all happened, and he'd done what was estimated to be done, which I wasn't there, so I can't confirm that he'd done. But we got, after that, we got into Merseymetro, we managed to get some food, and then we're all told, like, you know, word round, because it was just a whole schmuzzle. Everybody, get down to brigade headquarters as much as you can. Anybody, get down that way. And we were just pointed and told to go. And when we got there, because we're doing, I had to get on transport. Any transport that anybody that could drive had to drive a truck. Anybody that couldn't drive, I was doing their surplus. Get on the truck. Well, I got on a 6-pounder portee with some other lads. And off we went. After what happened was, I know it sounds daft, and some probably wouldn't believe you, but we went out onto the desert at night time in the dark, and we were going around in circles like India, like an Indian powwow thing, you know, dunes. And at midnight, everybody just had to break rank and just drive like hell and keep on driving. And, of course, driving like mad, and this portee, the 6-pounder, was causing trouble, so we stopped. So that took the firing pin out and dumped it off. And we were doings. And when we went through what we're doings, it was like Blackpool illuminations with tracers going backwards and forwards. And that's how we got out of Merseymetro doings.
So can I just briefly go back to the very brief moment that you were a prisoner? You were captured, you got up in the morning and the Germans were around you. And they brought you out. Then you were shelled by Indians.
Well, we're given to understand it was the Indians that opened up on the they realised that we were being escorted, and it was the understanding.
And was that under that confusion that you got away? How come the Germans left you?
Well, one of their carriers was hit, but there was only about five. Well, I would say there's no more than about 10 jerrys, you know, doings. And doings, they realised that doings.
So they couldn't hold you anyway.
Couldn't hold us anyway. Doings. And then we got doings.
So then you got back and you're basically driving away as hard as you can go.
Well, that was more or less probably the next year, though, that's the same day. We must have been doing it. We got something to eat, doings. And as I say, we were told we had to make our way on foot down to where brigade headquarters was, or some of the doings. And that was the way we come to get out, as I say. We're on this transport going around like a circle, doings, because we're all mixed up personnel, you know.
What happened next then?
Well, eventually we got further back and we reformed with the 9th. We found our own, but we got doings, and we got sorted out and got our doings, and the battalion went on defence duties.
This was in the Alamein area, was it?
Further south, you know, doings.
Do you recall where your drafts were coming from? Because you'd lost a lot of men.
Doings.
At Merseymetro, hadn't you?
Oh, yes, I. Well, that was the company's problem. See, I'm talking about... D Company must have been beside us, because Adam Wakenshaw was D Company. He was always known as D Company Sergeant Major, where he wasn't, you know, he could neither read nor write, which is... When we sort of got back, we were in an area which I cannot name, I don't know, but we were doing defence for guard duties on an airfield. Until we got more reinforcements came out from Blighty and whatnot, we got a lot of Southerners and whatnot. We reformed again. And that's when I picked up one or two of the newer lads, a couple of joiners and that, and they come and got into our battalion, into the company. The platoon.
Did you get any opportunity to get any leave in the Delta?
No.
You still hadn't got a day or two off?
No, not then. We were doing, as I say, we were doing defensive duties on an airfield, but whilst we were reforming. And this particular night, we were doing, we swore blind that we were getting gassed. And there was a panic on among the lot of us, you know? They're doing this. I've got a photograph somewhere. What it was, when it would come daylight, what it was a bomb, in a canister bomb. It was 5 foot high, and it was full of about 1.5 inch triangles, so no matter which way it fell, the points were sticking up. And they were shattered onto the air, where the aircraft was, or the, like the runways, and shattered onto there. And the paint on them was still wet, and it was cellulose. And then that's what we could smell as it was as they were coming down, you know, just whizzling through the air, making a noise like dunes. And it wasn't the next morning, break of dawn, that we realised what it was, but we thought it was gas at that particular time. You know, but the next day, all we had to do was go around that bloody airport, picking them up hand by one, by hand.
Who dropped them?
Jerry had dropped them. I've got a photograph of the canister that just splits in two and it just comes out in a big mass and shattered down.
It was an explosive device, was it?
Well, there will be an explosive, just like a fuse, I would say. It splits and allows the shell to open, split in two. I'll get it out and show you it sometime.
Were your duties still very much the same as they'd always been?
Just as normal, just waiting until such time as we got back into action again, or moving on the dunes again. As a matter of fact, it was reforming for to do well, I mean, you know, dunes, but it took a little while, which you'll have more days, night times than I have. Dunes.
What happened next to you?
Well, once we got organised and moved north, or wherever it was, towards Alamein, Fort Alamein, we got into the area where there was a striking off point for Alamein, and we're all lagered up. And when it broke dawn, if you'd seen what was in the desert or what was round about us, God grief, just looked like one, no matter where you looked, transport tanks, dunes, camouflage tanks, and what have you, dunes. But it was cancelled for 24 hours. So the order was minimum of movement as possible. And when you went to Cookhouse for the containers for to get your grub, there's only maybe two, maybe four of you had to move. The rest of you just had to lie doggo, and they would bring the food. And the least movement of possible, all during daylight hours. Then it went in it the following night.
What was your role in this? Did you have a job to do?
Well, I was ready.
Could be Operation Supercharge on the
dunes. Well, we're just doing our own dunes, making the, you know, carrying the crosses and making the signs up ready for the any movement and one thing or another. And
did you have anything to do with marking out, forming up places and starting lines for?
No, that coming a little at that particular time. No, that didn't apply to me then, but I can remember going through the barrage, you know, with the companies is already forward. But we had to come through the barrage, dunes, and as you know, it was 25s firing normal, 25 fires supercharged, and then the long toms. And then the change place changed over, dunes. And it's a sight that'll never ever be forgotten. Now, when that barrage went and died down, They started coming through, and they were coming through the companies and whatnot, and the prisoners rather, and the first two or three that come through, they say, "Oh, you better." We sent a lad down with them to get them dunes, and sent another one down. Then we realised after a little while, they were coming out thick and fast. We had to stop. Sending lads down, we just had to see pointing to go that way, you know, that coming out. And I think if you remember the figures quoted, but that particular night it was 30,000 came out, and they were all itized. And Dennis Thompson, the corporal, had been hit. I didn't know he'd been hit, and I was on the move, and I saw him, he was on a, they had him on a jeep on a stretcher. And a lad from Sunland was the driver of the Jeep. And just by that, there was a motor bomb or something went, and he got shrapnel. So I drove the Jeep down to the field ambulance. But Dennis got died of his wounds afterwards. And when I was down there, where all I could do was sort the lads out from the daylight, the ninth lads, and took them. I said, you better all come back with us and let somebody else drive the Jeep. And we all took them back, and back to the battalion again. And that's when I was made up the full corporal. Just after that, that's when I was made up.
So these men at the regimental aid post that you took your corporal to, there were, you said there were some ninth men to sort out there.
No, well, the lads that was doing the prisoner of war, like, you know, they were taking the prisoners down. They were down, because down beside HQ, brigade headquarters, the Doans and Doans, and that's where, when they were there, say, you know, there's nothing you can do down here. You better come back.
Had you been under fire yourself?
Not really.
Stage?
Not a lot. It was all for, well, to so be quite still, honest, there was too much going the other way for to get much back. You
so
know.
You were still well behind the companies.
But the only thing I can say about that was we're doing is once the thing is settled down, and we did eventually move. God, you couldn't imagine. There was a shell hole every 4 foot. You couldn't imagine. I couldn't understand them coming out like quivering.